All righty. I've got 1 o'clock, so we're going to go ahead and get started with the workshop. Welcome, everyone. And sounds like an exciting topic just from the agenda, but I'll turn it over to Tom to introduce.
Great. Thank you. And it was funny, in my one-on-one with Bob started talking about AI stuff, and I'm like, oh, okay, did you see the workshop? He goes, oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
So Bob was spot on with some AI thoughts, and I said, well, we're actually going to cover it this month. So with that, I'm going to introduce Dr. Amy Locklear to introduce the group.
Thank you, and good afternoon. We're very glad you're here to hear about some of the efforts that we have researched and are doing here at Daytona State in this very important area. As I'm sure you are aware, AI has infiltrated all of our thinking about everything that we do on the academic side and the business side. And so we have formed an AI Governance Council, and you see before you the four chairs of that council. And I am going to stop there and turn it over to them. These are some of our best and brightest minds at the college, and we are thrilled that they have taken this leadership role. So with that, thank you for the presentation today.
Hello, can you hear me? Is it on now?
There we go.
I'm Candace Valley, and I'm the Associate Director of Resource Development.
Good afternoon. Dave Tatum, Director of the IT Help Desk and Field Tech Area.
Hello, I'm Rich Villaro. I am the Chair of the School of Communication.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Cohen. I'm Dean for the Division of Online Studies and the Department of Professional Development. So we're here to talk to you a little bit about our the things that we've worked on with generative AI really the past year and a half through the Governance Council. Our title is Holding Hands with the Robot because it's been a very collaborative effort as we've continued to explore this innovative technology. And we have one more presenter for you
Welcome
today.
Welcome to the Generative AI District Board of Trustees workshop, Holding Hands with the Robots. In the next 30 minutes, we will provide an overview of how Daytona State College is using AI in the classroom and in departments throughout the college. And by the way, I am not a real person. I am AI generated. I hope you have a great meeting.
So thank you to our marketing department for putting that together very quickly. That's just one of the many generative AI tools that we have in our tool belt here at Daytona State College that also we've been playing with. So we're going to go back in time a little bit. December 2022 is really when we all started talking about generative AI. And maybe that was something that wasn't really part of your lexicon as much. It certainly was something that we had discussed over in online studies for specifically AI, but generative AI and how we would use it with our faculty and our students was really new to the conversation. This is when the tool ChatGPT became available and everybody suddenly started using it. So back in spring and summer of 23, we really started to document, well, what were the cases that we were seeing with our classrooms, both in person and online? How often did we see something that may have been generated by AI? How could we tell? What detection tools did we have for our faculty members to really understand if students were generating text or images using these types of generative AI tools? And it really became a pervasive buzzword throughout higher education, as well as business and in other industries. In fall of 23, we were tasked to really start to explore this a bit more throughout the college with our faculty. We started to do these Let's Talk Teaching workshops about every other month. Rich and another faculty member, Liz Barnes, started to really form these workshops together so faculty could, again, discuss when they were potentially seeing generative AI in the classroom, if they were adding it to their own pedagogy and curriculum, and what that meant for the learning that was or was not occurring. And then we were starting to, again, look at this from more of a professional development standpoint, having our staff members as well do some workshops in spring of 2024. And we were tasked by Dr. Labasso to form the AI Governance Council, of which you have the academic subcommittee, myself and Rich, and then the business subcommittee with Candace and Dave.
All right, so I'm going to be teacher mode, no microphone. So we identified right away that this was going to be something that we needed to pay attention to and address on the academic side. So we felt like we were kind of ahead. When it said the whispers began, it really did. We started hearing about this thing, this disruptive technology. And as teachers, we just mobilized. We were doing monthly talks, workshops from the start, which was great. We were very proactive. And here's some things we learned, like best practices in academics so far. So one, like you have to have some type of usage policy in a class, and it can't just be about integrity, right? We're not here to catch cheaters, right? We're here to build a culture of integrity, but also to prepare our students for the workforce, which means integrating AI. AI is going to be very important for your job. And so a usage policy is not just don't cheat. It's how are we going to use it to learn? So that's the first thing we learned. The second thing is how are we assessing our students? What assignments are we giving? Are they going to have to change because of this technology? So just reconsidering our course outcomes, our assignments, collaborating as educators and saying, hey, what are you trying? How are they learning now differently than they were maybe last month? So that's the second thing we did. And then, of course, like in the integrity part, we have to have a combination of not just a tool that says there's this percent of cheating. There has to be other ways of getting to ethical use beyond just a detection tool. So again, like we're doing these things that we've learned by staying proactive and being ahead of the technology, I think. So, and the business side.
You know, and as Rich mentions, on the academic side, we knew on the business side there were several things that we had to get ahead of. First and foremost would be updating the college policies and procedures, right, to include AI-specific language. One of the main reasons we need to do that is to set up guardrails for the college, right? One of our, obviously, you know, charges are to ensure that we protect college information and college data. So that's important that we have clear and concise procedures and policies that we can refer to help employees use AI, you know, ethically, professionally, everything else. And then finally, we all know how quickly changing the AI field is, right? 18 months ago, AI was totally different than it is today. I have no doubt that 18 months from now, it's going to be drastically different as well. So we need to keep our finger on the pulse, right? We need to keep an eye on risks, opportunities, laws, legislation, just to make sure that we are keeping up and being agile with advances as they come.
So general education skills. So we teach a lot of general education courses, myself included, who teaches the college composition class. And what are the skills that we've learned that students are going to need when they leave and they graduate? And what are the employers going to look for? So the number one skill is prompt engineering, which Cheryl's going to talk a little bit more about. It's basically like how do you ask the AI to do the thing you want it to, right? It's a skill. It's like going in a library database and saying, I need all this research, and how do I make the database give me the answers I need? It's almost the same thing, except, again, there's a lot of work applications for this. And then once the AI spits out the information, how do I interpret it and use it? Right, so how to make this usable information to help me for whatever my goals are. And then what we learned from some of the small businesses is, like, if they want to use AI to generate communication, how do they humanize it? They don't want to sound like robots. You don't want to read an ad and say, that doesn't sound like a person is advertising for that company, right? So, like, humans will have to humanize the AI output, which is going to be another skill that we can teach students about voice and tone and all those things that we teach in communication classes.
So Rich and I gave a presentation to the Chamber of Commerce a few weeks ago, and we used this prompt to talk a little bit about writing effective prompts using generative AI. The audience there were small business owners, and they were interested in how they would use generative AI for their small businesses. And so just like we would with our students, we wanted to start off with, well, what is the AI need? So what do we want the AI to do? What product should be included? Some keywords. Our prompt is only as good as some of the keywords that we put into it. And then how can we have that prompt work effectively? So for example, if we want it to create an image as opposed to text, that's part of the prompt that we need to tell the AI. So we're going to take a couple minutes and we're going to generate some AI generation now. So I'm going to go ahead and hop over to Microsoft Copilot. Here at Daytona State College, we predominantly use Microsoft Copilot. This is something that our employees had access to, and then more recently, our students also have access to this. Copilot also incorporates some of ChatGPT, DALL-E, some of these other generative AI tools that maybe you've heard of. So for example, if I am a nursing student who's about to go on a job interview, I might use something like Copilot to help me think about common interview questions. So we're going to say politely to the robot, please provide the 10 most common interview questions for a nursing job. Okay. Oops. Let's accept the privacy. Yes. Certainly, Copilot tells us. So right away, it starts to generate the 10 most common nursing interview questions. You can see that actually it did itemize the 10. It doesn't always. Last time we tried this, it only gave us 7. So, you know, it's not perfect. And then it also, at the end, told us good luck with our nursing interview. So we were friendly to the robot. The robot was friendly to us.
Yes. Follow up and get more information.
Right.
From AI.
Yeah. And similar with like Google, where it's like, did you mean this as you're typing something out? And you're like, no, I did not. Or yes, I did. AI here will do the same thing. Like Rich said, it's going to give you some additional prompts that maybe you didn't think of before that you can click on, play with it. We can copy this. We can rate it, you know, so it gets smarter as we use it. And then we also have citations down here that it was pulling from, including things like nursingworld.org, nurse.org, et cetera. So this is some different ways that we can, again, use the AI. We also can use it for something maybe a little less job or academic focused. So for example, okay, so if you can't see my little type, it says, please create an image of cats in steampunk dress, reading books, and eating pizza, as you would with using generative AI.
I just want to be really practical with our applications in the classroom. Students do love this feature, by the way, especially when they're doing creative works.
Yes. So, you know, very quickly, it did this pretty random prompt that we came up with, right? I don't know if this is the most, you know, practical use of generative AI. Students could use this to create images for a presentation, for a speech that they're giving. We could also ask the AI to make it a little bit more like photorealistic. This is a little bit more like animated looking. I don't know what this is. Is this a mushroom? Is it a flattened out blueberry? So there's a little bit that we could also edit sort of in the post creation. This is a very interesting steampunk look here.
And it likes the blueberries.
It does like the blueberries, yeah. For some reason, this prompt, I know. So that's just, again, some of the tools that we already have that are available to us and to our students.
Almost like pineapple on a pizza. I know some people like that.
Yeah.
It's very controversial. So now that we've looked at a few ways that you can use generative AI, you may be wondering, how do I actually implement that? And like any good project, you really start with your why, the purpose, or maybe the problem that you're trying to solve. And then you identify the actionable steps to getting there. So you look at the end date. I want it done by this time, and this is my result. and you work backward with actionable steps as well as milestones. Then you build your team around that, and that may be internal to your department, but also other areas within your organization that can help implement AI. And choose your AI platform. So sometimes AI is already built into platforms we already have, like Adobe. And other times you may need to go out and procure from, you know, out in the world, other AI that you don't already have within your organization. And then you begin implementation and you monitor the progress. And we forget that along the way, you have to monitor as you go. And I didn't mention in the beginning, pull some data. And also pull data as you're moving along so that you can show the progress and the impact that AI is having. So now that we know kind of how to implement AI, we'll look at how some of our external partners as well as our internal colleagues are currently using AI or also wanting to use it in the very near future.
So I'm going to talk about the use cases. So I went on a tour. I talked to department chairs, students, colleagues, people who have advisory boards, and our Chamber of Commerce. And so we thought, well, how are students going to use this in the workplace? Like, what should we be preparing them for? What are the actual, like, work-related uses of AI that are practical? So I tried to think of programs we have here. So in nursing, I talked to Dr. Chesley, and he said, hey, they're already using ChatGPT to formulate care plans, and it saves time. Now, they have to review those care plans after. They can't just say, oh, great, it's done. You're still responsible, but it helps so much in, like, saving time and automating, like, tedious processes. Radiography, they're using it to screen images. Again, it does that initial screen so they can focus their time maybe on focusing on some of the images that it pulls out. And then medical billing and coding, there's this idea, like, maybe is this going to go away? Well, from what I've heard is they're using it for dictation now, but it's really not able yet. It's not advanced enough to, like, automate the whole process. So it's getting there, but it's not there yet. So that's healthcare. Cybersecurity, I'm going to go to my good friend Dave because he knows a lot more about that than I do.
Thanks, Rich. So cybersecurity, it's, I'm sure you've heard the old adage, you know, two sets of eyes are better than one. Imagine if one of those sets of eyes are AI, right? Its ability to monitor and look at, you know, millions of data points as they're happening, you know, as they're coming across the network. You know, in this room, there's, you know, so much wireless traffic that's just, you know, out there going back and forth. No matter how big of a team that we have, you simply can't compete with what AI brings to the table as far as monitoring, the ability to detect traffic that's an anomaly. You know, AI can say, hey, listen, the traffic that we're seeing on Daytona State's network matches an attack that was happening last night in Washington State. We wouldn't have known. AI has that intelligence to say, hey, this looks indicative of an attack. Puts a red flag that allows our professionals, you know, IT professionals, cybersecurity professionals, to look at it and say, oh my goodness, you're right. This, we have an attack that is imminently happening. Let's shut it down. So that's something that you see as a recurring theme, especially on the business side, is efficiency, right? It's like a force multiplier. We could have 100 cybersecurity professionals looking at the network. Still, you're not going to be able to match what AI can bring to the table as far as that live, real-time monitoring. And the business supervision and management side, one of the things that you may have heard is chatbots, right? That's kind of the buzzword now. Everybody's doing a chatbot. The idea behind chatbots is to provide an interactive, intelligent capability to respond to most common questions. I'm happy to announce, first time in a public forum, so this is top secret, we're actually looking to launch one here at the IT Help Desk in August, hopefully to have it launched before the fall semester begins. The idea behind that is just as you see, we may not have enough agents. You know, when the first day of fall classes start, we are swamped, right? We're trying to service the students, faculty, staff. But if you have a relatively easy question, if you've locked yourself out, if the chat bot can understand that, hey, I can't log into my account, it can provide you responses immediately without having to have, you wait on a phone queue. Same thing, if it's Christmas morning, 2 a.m., and you realize there's a report you have to send out, you've locked yourself out, I'd like to think that my team is, you know, sound asleep waiting for old Saint Nick to come down the chimney. However, you're going to need that help, right? So if you log into that chat bot and say, I can't log in, it's going to know, hey, looks like you're having problems logging in. Let me help you get logged in. And then finally, it goes back to the efficiency standards, right? Streamline operations. AI provides an incredible opportunity to look at financial reports, analyze performance metrics, look for anomalies, look for account numbers that may have been used in fraud in the past, 10 years. Again, things that humans really can't be, expected to maintain that same level of performance. And then finally, project management, something near and dear to me as the director of our IT project management office, has been able to leverage AI to look at, you know, incredibly complex contracts and statement of works. We can take a statement of work that is 20 pages long, feed it into Copilot and ask, hey, give me the top 10 deliverables. Give me some risks. Give me some, you know, potential deliverables as we expect to get out of this. And if you've ever been on a project with me for the Daytona State College folks, lessons learned is a huge thing in project management, right? Every time we end a project, we look at lessons learned. This provides an opportunity to take all of this volumes of lessons learned on previous projects, feed it into Copilot, and say, hey, we have a similar project coming up. Can you identify some potential pitfalls that we may need to be aware of based on historical documentation? Which, again, would have taken folks hours to pour through all these lessons learned. This really provides a more efficient way to do so.
I'll comment on that, too, is like when, you know, when someone who's been at the college for 30 years leaves, you lose that institutional knowledge, you start feeding this type of information, and you know it's that lesson learned doesn't go with the person who is overseeing that project.
And then I'm going to pass it off to Candace to talk about marketing.
Thank you. I think we've already seen a little bit of this in action. So generative AI creates written and visual content. It can also spread it across multiple platforms like Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn. We're also seeing the ability of generative AI to personalize your message and target specific populations. And so we have three examples actually from our marketing department here at Daytona State, led by Director Chris Tome, who's in the house today. Thank you, Chris. So our first one that we have is actually a picture of a dorm room in our residence hall. And so it looks a little bare and not lived in. And so typically we would have one of our designers go in and add a lamp or a picture, and that could take some time. With generative AI that's already built into our Adobe Photoshop suite, they were able within minutes to put pictures, plants, even a person walking through, and really personalize this image, which when we look at the full scope of our marketing material, we have the building and now this very lived-in dorm room, and it makes you want to live there rather than just bare bones and this is what it could be. Our second example is something similar. Again, we are working with an existing photo that we have of our Student Government Association. So as you can see, this is a vertical photo with some white space. Why? We wanted to tailor this photo to put it onto our website in what's called a hero shot, which is horizontal and very long. Now, we could have had our students come out and put the shirts back on and get the photographer. It would take a lot of time and energy. What we did was, again, put it into Photoshop and have AI fill in the blanks. And so they took what was already there in the picture. And if you actually go out there, some of that's not there, but it looks very natural and like it should be there. And so here it is on our website in action. And I think it looks great. And it saved a lot of time and money for our marketing team. So just a little bit of what AI, generative AI, can do in systems that we already have here at the college. Our third example was done in a system called Canva, and this was actually created. So this was last year. I'm sorry, this one was created last year in-house. Boots and bling, I'm sure you're all familiar with this image. And we really want to emphasize the bling. And so one of our designers meticulously placed each rhinestone on the boots and on the bling. And that takes time to get it to look natural and make it look blingy, but not cheesy or fake. But this year they wanted more bling. And so how do we do that with the least amount of time? We put it in Canva and we ask generative AI, what can you do? And this is what it came up with. These boots, the hat, the rhinestones, and I think it took a matter of minutes. And so again, we're saving, back to Dave's point on efficiency, we're saving time, which ultimately we're saving money. So these are just some really great, easy examples, in addition to the one from the beginning of the AI-generated person saying, hi, welcome. Just some really great examples of what we're doing in the marketing department here at Daytona State College. And so now that you've seen how it's being used, Cheryl's going to take you on another fun activity of can you spot AI?
So this is what we call gamification over in online studies. Now that we're all AI experts, we're going to spot if something was generated by a human or is a human or is generated by AI. All right. Uh-oh, it's loading.
And I just want to say when I took this, my success rate was 3 out of 10. So, you know,
our expectations are high. So don't feel fast.
It's harder than it looks.
So I did this with my Quanta students this last semester. These are honor students, I might add. We also got 3 out of 10. So what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and start the game. And just from a show of hands from everyone here in the audience, do you think this is AI generated? Do you think, okay, all right, I didn't. Or do you think it's a real human? Okay, so we're going to just do majority rules. We're going to say this is generated by AI. What about this text? Is this AI written or human written? I'll give you a few seconds to read through it. All right, so was this written by AI? Okay, was this written by a human? All right, so majority rules, we say human. What about this one? Again, another text. Tech giants struggle to stem infodemic of false coronavirus claims. Is that headline written by AI? Okay, or a human? All right, we're going to say AI for that one. Oh, getting a lot of text this time. Okay. Was this written by AI? Or by a human? Okay. Voters are saying human. What about this man? Was he AI generated or is he real? AI generated? Real. Oh, all right. We felt strongly about that one. What about her? Is she AI? Okay. What about human? I think the humans got that one. We'll go with that. This gentleman, AI. Okay, Amy. Amy feels strongly it's AI. Or human. Okay. Amy, we'll see if you're right. This woman, is she AI? We're almost done, by the way. We have just two more. AI or human. Okay. AI. Human. Yeah, oh God, that was close. I'm going to say AI. I think AI got that. Last one. AI. Okay, what about human? I think AI got that one. All right, are we ready? We got 2 out of 10. So it's hard to tell, right? That's okay. We're all learning. So she is a real human, and I have to say she stumped my Quanta students as well. Yeah. Yeah. And actually, that's something that came up in my class also is, well, yeah, it could be real, but what about Snapchat filters or Instagram filters? This text was written by AI. I believe we said human. This was written by a human. We must have said AI. This gentleman is AI. We thought he was real. She is real. We got that right. Amy, I think that was you. I think that's the one you said. Oh, okay. Generated by AI. Yeah. We guessed human. Okay. I didn't mean to call you out. And then generated by AI. We said human. Generated by AI. My students got this one too. They were like, I don't see any pores on her face. I don't think she's real. The earrings are too nice. Yeah. And then real human, we said AI. So again, it's tricky to tell. And we're all kind of navigating this new world together. All right. Oops. There we go. Did I skip one? Oh, no. Okay. So we did also quiz the Daytona Regional Chamber of Commerce. They didn't do much better, so don't feel bad. But we did also show them a tool called Padlet that some of our faculty use with their students. It's just a quick way to get some information from students. They can use their phones. They can use their computer. And what we asked them was, what do you want Daytona State College students to know about generative AI? You know, you're going to potentially hire our students in the future. What are some skills that you want them to know? I really like this comment here. Use AI as a glorified intern. You would never use their work word for word. You must fact check everything. So again, that kind of comes back to our holding hands with the robot theme. Ultimately, we're the subject matter experts. We want to make sure that we have sort of the final review, the final submission, the final say. But we could potentially use AI as a partner as we continue to develop and cultivate our work.
And this was apparently a hot ticket because we sold out the chamber. We had 30 participants that filled the room. And we had a range of like insurance to tree services to a radio DJ, just all kinds of different business owners who were either had no idea what AI was to very advanced users. So we tried to tailor our presentation to kind of meet their needs and get some feedback about, well, what do you want our students to know? So, and they were a great audience. They were very active and willing to participate and give us feedback. So it was a really good experience for us.
Definitely. All right.
All right, so what have we learned? Well, after all of this work, we've learned a lot. And, you know, there's some misconceptions about AI. It's been around a long time. We've been using AI. I think we were the first family to have the Alexa and ask it things in the kitchen, and we thought we were the coolest people on the block. And now everybody has it on their phone. But even though it's been around a long time, last year is when it really advanced. It kind of like went to the next level. And so we needed to, of course, go to the next level as well. And I think the opportunity as educational institutions is that it is not widely adopted beyond basic use now. And that's an opportunity for us to prepare our students, right? To say, like, hey, you're not using this beyond basic use. Wait till you see our students. They're going to be able to do some things for you. In fact, the businesses were saying, like, we want your students to teach us, like, how to use AI and how to implement it. So we're like, we're there. We got this. So things that we've learned so far. And then so we showed in the beginning, like, where were we? And here's where we're going. So this summer, we've been super active. We've been trying to discuss use cases with industry partners, again, advisory boards, colleagues, students, finding out what we need to know to do a good job in educating our students. Finalizing edits to college procedures, both academic and business, is very important to, you know, address this technology. And also, like, we now have a requirement. Start in the summer. We said, you got 2 weeks. We want your AI use policy in your syllabus. And don't think of it, again, as just academic integrity. How are you going to use it to prepare your students? So, and all our faculty were like, yes, and they did. And so all the syllabi for the summer already have a use policy with options for, like, to give them suggestions. Like, hey, here's how you might want to craft your class around AI. And in the fall, we plan on to continue doing professional development and training faculty. It'll be an ongoing training because as the AI advances, so do we need to advance as well. And then academic integrity, we're gonna have to talk that out. We do not want to be barriers for students. And, you know, I always tell this story, and it was around 2008, and Turnitin.com came to the college, and plagiarism was a thing, and everyone was worried about it, and they were integrating into their classes, like, we're gonna catch the cheaters, and like, no, that is not what we do. We teach students. We're gonna use it as a tool to teach them how to paraphrase, how to research. We're not here to catch students and be a barrier. And that's how we see this. This is not about, I want to catch everyone who's using AI. I want to teach you how to use it ethically so it's going to help you. So, again, we're doing the same response. You know, 2024, 2008, it's kind of the same thing. I remember teaching when the cell phone's going to undo education, and then it really didn't. So all of these technologies come, they disrupt, but we adapt, and we're stronger for it. So, and that's it. Q&A. Ask us anything. Oh, all right.
So great presentation. And, you know, as Tom mentioned, I was
keenly interested in this and to see what the college was doing. And we are sort of at an inflection point, maybe the first of many. And when it comes to this technology, I'm a huge advocate for AI and embrace it, use it, be on the forefront, be on your front foot, because it's changing so rapidly. We're going to see a massive disruption, not just in education, but in many, many industries across the globe. So when you think about it, you know, I'm super impressed with what you're doing thinking ahead rather than reacting to what's happening, because as an old timer, you know, I remember in school and in high school, you had to do math exams, but you couldn't use a calculator. You know, I did my law school exams in longhand cursive, which most students couldn't read today. And they were in blue books, and this was before the internet. And you had closed book exams where you actually had to memorize certain things and put in things that you know, could keep in your head.
Did you have running water?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The outdoor toilets were a problem. But anyway, it's so you think about all of these things that we said, you got to kind of eschew technology and, you know, and here we are. And it's sort of like, no. We need to embrace it. You need to use it and figure out how to enhance. I highly recommend book recommendation, brand new book that's out. It's called Brave New Words by Salman Khan of the Khan Academy. And he has been working with OpenAI and ChatGPT-4 to see what it's going to do in education across the globe and access to education for people, and basically giving them the same opportunities as if they were attending Daytona State College, but they live in Bangladesh or they live in, you know, Southern California. And don't have access. It's going to, you know, we have to shrink the digital divide and provide those opportunities. Highly recommend the book, though, because where you are situated, it's like it speaks, you know, exactly to the mission you're on. One of the things that you didn't talk too much about, I may have missed it in my enthusiasm, but what it does for educators. From, you know, we talk about what it means for the students, but what does it mean for the educators and for your faculty and to be able to embrace this technology in creating assignments, creating collaborative environments in the classroom or outside of the classroom, using information that they would never have had access to before in creating creative works and so forth. I think about teachers that spend a lot of the time, I know because I've done this, and when you grade papers, and I can't get past grammar and punctuation. And so imagine a world that's, you know, today, where you should never have to look at something that's misspelled or the grammar is incorrect. It should be perfect every single time. And by the way, then you can get to the substance of it. You're not distracted by the you know, frailties of people being in a hurry and making those kinds of mistakes. And the idea that AI could grade papers and take the first pass in a class of 45 students, mm-hmm. could do the first run through of all the grades, and it could tell you this student did an over reliance on AI, mm-hmm. and the AI will spot it. Versus, you know, the educator trying to figure out which is human, which is the robot, which is AI, which is human. It's, you know, that creative. There are so many. There are endless possibilities. I'm super and, you know, excited about where you are and the mission you're on. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see what's going to happen with Daytona State College, not just here, but how it permeates in the K-12 environment. And prepares your students for the future.
Yeah, I can say from the academic side, so in our Let's Talk Teaching workshops, we focused every month on, like, what we were doing in the classroom and trying and experimenting with. So, like, creating a rubric for a new assignment sometimes is really difficult because you're like, don't really know what I'm looking for yet. I've never done this before. And AI can give you some really good rubrics and suggestions. Or I wanted to try a project with my comp class where they were blogging their progress throughout the semester just to see like how they thought they were progressing. And just to get help with a new assignment using AI was great. So we're trying to have conversations about use and like experimentation.
Good.
Yeah. Which is really helpful because it can automate some things that really, like creating assignments, rubrics, trying new things, sometimes is daunting. So for sure it has been, you know, we're seeing the power and the benefit.
And some of the tools that we have now in our learning management system do use AI. So, for example, we have something called Video Assignment that uses AI to detect how many times the student submitting the video used the word or paused or things that will also increase their public speaking skills.
Great.
So in this whole study, and I'm sorry I was late, but I asked this question, so Kelly, she's either set me up or I'm in good position.
I might have set him up.
Might have set me up.
Time
will
tell. Was it AI or was it?
Yeah.
Which Kelly was it?
So from a legal perspective, are you following, you know, how that's moving around? And, you know, just one thing that's simple to me that I think about, at least in the short term, the possibility that a disclaimer that would say this image created by, you know, artificial AI or some version. Do you have any updates on that, on where we are in that process right now?
There's definitely a lot of debate about authorship. And so really the best practice now is just to attribute it to the AI, to say, to be transparent about use, right? Because we don't know necessarily sometimes where the AI is getting the work from. So we have to be careful about copyright. And then if you are putting information into AI, we have to be careful we're not putting sensitive information. So if I put information about a student that is confidential because I'm trying to catch them or do something, I'm uploading something that I shouldn't be, right? Like, because that, again, is a legal issue. So we're very careful about, at least on the faculty side, explaining, like, be careful how you use it and be transparent about what you're using from it. So we're at least attributing the use. But again, I think it's a developing concern about authorship and what that means. I don't know if the business side
Sure. And, you know, I mentioned the chatbot, right? One of the things that they stressed during the implementation, we're doing a third-party consultant to help us out, was you have to be clear that this is an AI chatbot, right? And the responses that it gives are AI-generated. So we have to be cognizant of what it's saying is a reflection of Daytona State. And if it has something that is, you know, out of bounds or not accurate, we want to make sure to say, hey, this is AI-generated. It may have errors, right?
It's also one of the reasons why we use Copilot and we recommend our students to use Copilot, because it's not going to save data that's getting put into the tool.
And we also stress, like, you're still responsible for the output if it's not accurate. So you can't say, well, it's the AI's fault, right? Just the same way you can blame a colleague when you're responsible for something. So, again, we are definitely looking at the legal and ethical ramifications, and they do seem to be developing.
We have edited our procedure. We actually just finalized those edits, and we've addressed some of the same topics, transparency, bias, with using generative AI as well. And so along with that, I don't know how many people are actually jumping into our policies and procedures here. I know I'm in them quite a bit, but we will have training rolling out as well in the fall and spring in conjunction with those changes. There's also a really great, it's called Brennan Center, and it's a legislation tracker, and it tracks everything that's coming through the U.S. in terms of generative AI. And right, so it's all these open cases. I think the latest one was from May 22nd. So those are some of the things we're doing on the business side of our committee.
On the Copilot, is it a site license fee or is it a per user license fee?
For us, it's included with our site license with Microsoft. I think it's available outside as well, but we have, it's a different licensing model, and it actually protects the information. And there's actually a disclaimer that they'll say that basically your information is safe that you put up there.
So it's the same, so for your license, it's the same price whether they use it or not.
I believe that's interesting.
I think it's based on our FTE. Looking
yeah,
at
I think IT. It's just in it within the licensing.
Part of the suite.
Not ours.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And it's a huge upgrade. $20 per
per user per month.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I know that I have
a private versus public, but it's or maybe it's changed. My information is 6 months old.
I know there's different.
Yeah, we have Copilot for the web, technically, I believe, which might be different than the Copilot you're referring to.
Yeah, that could be it. Yeah, because one of the ways I tried to use it a lot and had limited successes, I hate going back and searching through old emails because as many times as I try to organize them. And so it, to me, it was very intriguing to be able to go in and say, hey, find an email where I talked about this topic with this person or something like that. And it didn't fare very well.
Mm. You know, it's also had some trouble in some courts around the country where it's generated a work product for attorneys that they've submitted in briefs and memorandum to the courts, and the citations of authority have been incorrect.
Right.
And courts don't like that so much.
Hallucinations.
So the judges have reacted and sanctioned law firms and attorneys for their use of AI without disclosing and without checking, double checking. I think as you see, like you talked about in the 18 months and the 18 months and, you know, we're talking shorter and shorter periods of time, that's not going to be as much of an issue. Because it's going to start to figure out where it's making mistakes, and where it's gathering data and how it's using it, and where it's meeting those roadblocks and those mistakes are going to get fixed, just like software did, you know, in its early evolution, especially in with the advent of the internet. But and thinking about like when I talked to students last August, I talked about what are friction points that we deal with all the time in any industry and everything we do, you know, things that are just like, you know, like going to the doctor's office and getting that clipboard and having to fill out, you know, multiple pages in pen and ink, which then get inputted, by the way, by keyboard into a digital environment and saved. You know, those things are going to change. That's a friction point. And how do you react when you get that clipboard? I throw a fit, you know. I'm like, are you kidding me? But, you know, those things.
There's three forms, separate forms, and they all ask for the same.
That's correct.
Yeah. Yes.
But, you know, I talked about it in the context of insurance, you know, and people maybe fudge a little bit on the facts on an application for insurance because it affects your premium. AI that can go gather it from public sites, you know, and there's no faking it. You know, they can figure these things out and be able to catch a lot of those things before they get too far. But I also think from a cybersecurity standpoint, the spam filters and don't click on this email and putting the security burden on the end user is impossible. It is an impossible task. We will never get to where we need to be because, you know, folks out there that want to do, you know, bad acts, malicious acts, are always a step ahead. They're figuring this stuff out, and they're going to find the most vulnerable points. And using, you know, the end user for that, don't click on this, don't do this, put this, you know, it's like, forget it. You're never going to succeed. But AI is going to be able to ferret that stuff out before you ever even see it. And if we can overcome the creepiness factor of having AI be that screener in advance and possibly, it's wishful thinking maybe, but counterattack and we never know about it, you know, and wipe them out. But it's using those systems. It can think a lot quicker. It can react a lot quicker and making sure that your ecosystem is protected and secure and we don't ever have to get the warnings, don't click on this, do this, whatever. So anyway.
I'd like to ask a question about with AI. Several months back, there was a lot of discussion around ideology creeping into what the answers were being fed through AI. And one, how do you monitor that and try to, you know, stop it if you can? Right. And two, really get that point across. I think you said something really key about that it reflects the values of Daytona State. And I think that's extremely important that we don't creep into the dark side.
Like a bias.
Yeah.
Yeah. For like our research class, like writing with research. So So, you know, we're showing the students a tool. We're not pretending it doesn't exist. But then we're analyzing what it comes out with. And we'll even say, let's go to that source. Does it really say that? Because sometimes it makes up a quote, or it interprets the quote differently than the source did. Mm-hmm. Which, again, if there's an ideological slant to it, it right. might change the meaning. So by going to the original source like we would do to research, we can say, okay, let's see how it interpreted that. Sometimes it's not on the same page it said it was. It's a made-up quote, or the quote isn't accurate. So just like using the tool and not hiding from the tool, and then letting the students... Like my students will say, hey, I write better than this. Of course you do.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually empowering for them to feel like they're doing better. Now, the technology is getting better. The output's getting better. as Trustee Lloyd said, this is temporary. I think it's going to get there. But yeah. right now, for sure, you have to be very careful with how it's phrasing and what it's saying.
You know, it's interesting, Gary. You talk about, like, the bias in this. Again, read the book. But Brave New Words, Salman Khan talks about the lawsuit that just ended and went to the Supreme Court regarding Harvard and the University of North Carolina and their admissions process and the amount of bias that was already in there, endemic in their admissions process. And the fact that AI, if it can go through and screen and knows to hit the criteria that your admissions department sets, it actually can be less bias and eliminate less of that bias than the human element that is subconscious. It's it's not overt, but it's happening. And you know, by evidence of what happened to both of those institutions in that lawsuit and millions of dollars, you know, spent on fighting that all the way to the United States Supreme Court. So, you know, I think it has. It has the opportunity to create efficiencies and eliminate some of the things that we're not even conscious that we're doing and be that kind of pre-screen and allow us to look at it and say, it's interesting. I wouldn't have come to that decision, but based upon what it's producing, it's I think, again, brave new words, brave new world.
I like Huxley's reference as well.
Just one more question, and that I started thinking about our ranking as on online teaching, and then you think about technology meeting technology, you know, with online teaching. How do you see that whole integration playing itself out over the next few years?
Yeah, the U.S. News and World Report best online bachelor's degree, which I do submit that survey. So we're very mindful of it, definitely. And we don't want it to seem like in the virtual learning environment, it's a robot posting to a discussion board and then a robot responding to a discussion board.
Right.
We want to make sure that there's authentic learning that's happening. So that is very much part of the Let's Talk Teaching and the fall planning sessions that we'll have coming up again. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any others?
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks so much. Great presentation, and it's great to keep us up to date on what's happening and excited to see all the great work you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, we'll take a short break and reconvene at 2:00.